truth be told, or your bullshit getting old. The world is getting cold. Don't nobody owe you nothing, so quit fronting. Nothing wrong with being honest. It's a lot of broken promises. Truth be told, we could communicate without all the gun violence. All it took was one conversation. It'll prevent a whole lot of altercation.
Truth be told, where we keep it real and respectable. Today, I'm excited to announce my guest from A&E's hit show, 60 Days In. Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny J. Ramirez. How you doing today, Johnny?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Pretty good, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, brother.
Okay, so let's just get into some questions, all right?
Sure thing.
All right, one question that's been on my mind since I've seen the show is, you know, how heavily guarded are you guys, you know, having a camera crew there? You know, do they actually leave at night or do they stay there the entire time you guys stay there? How does that work?
Well, we are actually like inmates for reals. I mean, you are in there and you're inside the bunks and there's no security guard because nobody knows you're undercover. You're not even the COs. So you're pretty much on your own. They tell us to give them a warning sign, but it probably take them about 15 to 20 minutes to get there. And by then, it's pretty much too late. At nighttime, they have cameras watching you at night. So they know that if you're sleeping and if something is about to happen, they're at least watching you. So the camera crew have shifts that watch you 24/7. So they have people watching the cameras, other participants 24/7 on camera.
Yeah, I was curious because, like you said, it seemed like it takes them a long time to get to you guys. So, you know, it seems like by the time something could happen, they haven't gotten to you yet.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. I mean, things can happen so quick and so fast. I mean, it's just the best thing to do is just keep your guard up, put your back against the wall and make sure that you're not doing nothing or saying nothing stupid that's going to get you, you know, like in trouble or get you into something that you can't get yourself out of. You know, that's why pretty much they put so many different people there to see how to take care of themselves, if you will.
And, you know, with guys like us who've spent time out on the streets, did it seem like it was a little bit easier for you to fit in than, say, someone else who's never experienced that?
It was a lot more easier for me just because I grew up around the Black community and the Mexican community where the minorities were at home for me. So me being in Atlanta County, you know, Fulton County Jail, it was a lot easier for me. If I was probably to have been in an all-white jail, that probably would have been hard for me. So I give a lot credit to the none that are non-minorities because that's a lot more stressful, if you will. Even though I kind of felt I was a minority myself because out of maybe 30 people in our pod, I was probably only like the fifth Hispanic in there. And the rest were Black. So that was probably, I felt like a minority, but I didn't because I felt at home, you know, because I grew up in South Phoenix. I had the rough life, you know, so I still believe all people are my people and God's people, but it's okay. You know, it's totally how you respect people and they respect you. So you don't just put race in that way, but it's what it is. You know, like I said, if I was to be in all white jail, it would have been harder for me. So people like for my friend Matt, that would have been hard. That's hard for him. People like Jackie, people like Alan, Nate, all those other guys that are not the minority, that would have been hard for them.
Now, I wanted to actually ask you, how did it come that you got on the show? Like, what was that process? How were you picked to be on it?
That one's kind of hard to explain on how they got me on that. So I can't really go too much into that, but I could say that I was I put in for a documentary, and the documentary was I assumed that these college kids are doing a documentary. At the time, I was working 12-hour shifts, and I had a lot of time on my hand on the other days that I weren't working. So I was doing this Dave Ramsey kick, and I was trying to, like, make extra money. So what I would do is just go and go on the internet and find, like, jobs, you know, like, you know, fix a shelf or, you know, fix plumbing or whatever it may be. I'm kind of a jack of all trades and master at none. I ran into this documentary, and I'm like, sure, I'll do it, you know. And it said it was a paid documentary. I'm like, sure, you know. I thought it was gonna be like, you know, $50, $100, whatever, you know, whatever it may be, you know, anything to do a little quick documentary. I've never been on TV before. I don't know what it is about. But when they announced who they were, I had to sign a whole bunch of papers before I even found out who they were. And when they told me what it was, I was kind of shocked. I was kind of like actually like cursing. I didn't curse the lady out, but I was kind of like saying, you know, get the fuck out of here. You know, I just watched season two. You can't, that can't be true. And she's like, well, yeah, it is. And I'm like, well, you know, then the process went from there by saying, okay, I can't just pick up and go, you know, my job, I have a high paying job. I can't just leave. And they're like, well, you know, well, we can give you this much money in order to compensate for that so you can leave and still pay bills. I'm like, that makes sense. Why would I do it for free unless I was a millionaire, you know? So I did that, and we negotiated. And then I'm like, okay, let's do this. And my job actually let me do it, you know? So some of the participants actually lost their jobs, or they quit, or whatever it may be. I was fortunate to go on leave. But I ended up coming back and losing my job. But so that's how I came upon it. And then I went. So that's how I found it on the internet.
And that's funny. That kind of leads me into my next question. You said you had just watched the second season. I was going to ask you if you actively watched the show beforehand to try to get some kind of strategy and see how it went for the other participants.
Yeah, I saw season one, and I saw Zach was my favorite, and we were watching it, me and my son, and then my wife and my daughter. And then season two came on, and then so Zach was my favorite, and then season two came on, and then Ryan ended up being my favorite. And then it was so cool, you know. I was like real excited, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, I love Life PD, I love all these other shows on A&E. But so I was like, wow. And it was funny that you say that, because my son said, hey, Dad, could you do something like that? I'm like, yeah, I could do something like that. And I would never thought that I would be watching my favorite show. I'd actually be in the TV, if you will, you know. So yeah, I always watched it. I was never on Twitter. I was never on Facebook. I was never on any of that. It's kind of like a, when I signed up for the show and I'd gone through the whole process, they kind of ask you to get on social media so you can relate to fans and stuff like that.
Now, when you first got there, how hard was it to adjust to, you know, going from eating good to eating that prison food? And also for people who aren't really hip with how the jail and the food works, how much would it say, like, cost for somebody to get just a food and a drink with commissary?
So for the first question, it was so hard to get in there. I mean, your emotions were so mixed. You know, you're scared, you're going to jail, you're going to the unknown that you've never been there before. You're fighting your own emotions, because in all my life I've always either ran from the cops or I hated the cops. And I always, at the time, I didn't care if I was in jail or not, and I didn't care if I lived, to be honest with you. But when I grew older and started to be responsible, then I sweared up and down to always prevent myself from going to jail. So I've all my, you know, my young man years, I stayed out of jail by just doing the right thing. So I tried so hard doing that, and in the 90s and the early 2000s, that was so hard to do, you know, in Arizona here and especially my surroundings. So when I got locked up and handcuffs on me, it was so surreal that I couldn't fathom the fact that I'm here in jail. So when I got in there, the emotions of that, the emotions of everything you can possibly think of, was just coming down, crashing on me. So when you wake up in jail, or when you're actually going to jail, I happened to go in the middle of the night. They put me in the cell. When I woke up, that was the most shocking thing, because I just woke up, you know. So just pretend you just get up and you're in a little tiny closet almost, and you're like, okay, wow, and this is real, you know, and this is what it is. You don't make your coffee or have orange juice. You don't, you know, you don't do any of that. You're in jail. Your routine's gone. Yeah, your routine is gone. You know, you go in there with the mindset saying, I'm going to do this, but all that goes out the window because you thought you had a plan, and you don't. It doesn't go that way until you regain yourself. Then your plan continues. And as far as like the food thing, the food wasn't horrible, but it was food. I grew up in an era where food is food, you know. To me, I was proving something else, which A&E didn't show, but I wanted to show my son that's locked up and other individuals that are locked up that I didn't need commissary to survive in jail. I wanted to show the world and my son that the facility and our taxpayer money gives you food, they give you clothing, they give you a place to stay, they give you health care. So they give you all that. So I don't need, as an inmate, to be asking my loved ones out there that are actually working 9 to 5, or the single moms or the single dads or anything, to asking them for money when I did wrong. I'm in jail. Why am I asking them for money? I have what I need here in jail. So I don't need to be asking for that. So it's hard for me to answer your question about commissary and stuff, because I literally didn't have no commissary whatsoever. I'm wrong. I did get one pack of coffee. I bought a pack of coffee commissary for a gentleman that they didn't show. He was showing me the ropes, kind of, where he introduced me first. He kind of said, what's up? He was Hispanic, grew up in ATL, and he kind of like walked me around and showed me what's up. So it felt like I owed him that. Other than that, I didn't buy no potato chips. I didn't buy no cookies. I didn't buy none of that. I mean, I got the slop. I ate it. I'm fine. If I didn't want it, I didn't eat it. So
that kind of actually leads me right into my next question. You said you met a guy who kind of showed you the ropes. How do you feel you positively impacted the inmates, and did anybody have a positive impact on you while you were there?
I feel like I positively helped a lot of inmates by talking to them, helping them read, helping them write resumes. I was once a manager before, and I helped them how to do we role play how to interview for a job, how to talk, how to say the appropriate thing, not what to say, what not to say, by doing the right thing, by acting right, by not, you know, saying certain words. You know, there's certain gentlemen that kept calling me nigger. What's up, nigger? What's up, nigga? Well, you know what? My name is Johnny. It's not nigga. I understand you. I understand our language, because that's who we are. That's how our slang word is nowadays, and that's how we grew up. But it comes at a time where we gotta start calling each other by our names and start growing up and stop doing that kind of stuff. You know, I talk to them about it's time, it comes a time in a man's life or a woman's life where you got to take off the hoops, you know, pick up your pants, stop wearing the FU police shirts and start dressing the right way just so that your kids, your generation can see the man you are becoming and you, what you became. That's not who we are. That's what people like to say. That's our culture. You know, for the Mexicans and the blacks and the, even the whites, that's not our culture, you know, and art is our culture, you know, music is our culture, but don't dress the way where people start looking down at you. And that's how it is. That's how I grew up, you know, and again, so I think me talking to inmates that way and not being scared to say what I said and believe what I believe in. You know, and we had a few arguments in there, like, you know, well, you think you're better than me. Well, no, I just believe that it's time to grow up, you know. So they kind of understood it because, you know, coming from an older man with a lot of gray hair on my chin and you know, and try to talk right. And they understood. So they had respect. But there's a lot of young men in there that still didn't have the respect, and I think we lost that. But so anyway, so yeah, I felt like I impacted in that way, and believing in their dreams and hearing them and talking to them. So I think I took a big impact with that. Of course, A&E didn't show that, but it's fine. You know, they want to see drama. The world wants to see drama, but at least I know what I did in there with no camera needed. I feel great about that. It was first when I first saw the show, that was hard for me to see because it didn't show what I did. But after a while, I got content with myself to say it's okay because I didn't go in there for the cameras. I went to prove something to my son and to young men out there. So I'm okay with that. So at least I know what I did with the young kids and what like people like Matt did and Nate. And, you know, so at least we know we did certain things to young kids and help them. I'm fine with that. So, yeah. And what was your next question? I'm sorry. What was your last question?
Just if anybody had left a positive impact on you.
Yes. That was a hard one. It's hard. I think the only positive impact I had was actually my friend Matt, you know, and he was real wise and smart, and we balanced each other out, and we helped each other, and we cried in each other, and he made me understand a lot of stuff that I kind of didn't get, you know. So that's probably the only like positive impact I had in there, because everything in there was so negative. You couldn't find good stuff, you know. You couldn't find the great stuff in there, you know. So,
right, and that kind of leads me into my next question. You said the jail was so negative, and one thing that really impressed me about you was that you know you kept your morals intact. And I just was wondering how you were able to, you know, like when you stood up for that female guard when you know the inmate was calling her out of her name, and just like that impressed me. And how were you able to keep those morals intact? Because I feel like for me, I would probably go nuts after the first two nights.
Yeah. So it was hard to understand. See, there's five things I went in there to do. There's five things in my hand. I always look at my hand to say, okay, what are my five things that are important to me? The important thing to me is family. My son that I'm doing this for. My second thing is for my family, my daughter, my brothers and sisters, who I'm representing as a individual that's on TV. I'm representing Arizona. I'm representing the minorities in Arizona to say, hey, not all minorities from Arizona are like, you know, or whatever. There are a good one of us that come out of this and we're okay. I represented the Chicano race because, you know, a lot of people assume and it is true. I mean, there's a lot of us, most of the minorities are in jail are blacks and Mexicans. And I wanted to represent that. I didn't want to act like a fool on there and because that's not who we are. And now I got to make sure that the young kids out there understand that, because I'm a baseball coach. I'm surrounded by young women and young kids that I coach for softball and baseball. So I wanted to represent them as well to make sure it doesn't come back and say, hey, there's dumb coach on TV, or there's my stupid dad doing this stupid thing. Or so I had to make sure I represented that. And I had also, my last thing was, I had to represent myself. I had to say, okay, Johnny, who are you? Who are you? This is, you're going to go into something deep that you've never been into. Here it goes. So make sure you act right. Make sure show who you really are and don't act like a fool on there. So in that being said, I had to make sure that in back of my mind, all those things were in intact. So I always looked at my hand to say, remember these the five things. So when there's a fight going on all the time, or when there's arguments going on all the time, or even if I felt threatened or want to fight, or I felt like I want to lose my mind most of the time, I had to sit back and think about that. Because if I lost it, then all that goes out the window. Well, guess what? Alan, towards the end, was the young man's name. And the sad thing was that he was getting out that day. And I was trying to calm him down, because me and Alan, we talked through our whole experience, and we were like great. I mean, he was good, and he was a good guy. Nah, he is a good guy. Well, through the whole program as well, what people don't see on TV was he kept on making racial remarks. He kept on making derogatory things about women. He kept on starting fights. He was just young and just naive. But then, yeah, he had 2-3 kids, I think it was, a wife. And he was just, you know, I understood what his frustration was, because he was actually in there for a crime. And he had kids in the outside. And, you know, so I understood it. So that's why I don't dislike him. I was just trying to help him. And we talked and we joked and we loved each other through the whole 60 days. However, at the end, he was arguing with this lady because he couldn't get something. It was like a toothbrush, or I can't remember what it was. So I walked all the way from one into another and said, hey, Alan, you know, you're going to get it. I only knew that he was getting out. He only told me and Bucci that he was getting out. So I told him, hey, you know, you're getting out. Calm yourself down. You know, and just calm down. You know, you're going to get out. Don't mess up your chances. And he just kept on arguing with this lady. I'm like, listen, calm down, bro. You know, just calm down. So then when he started cussing the lady out, and the lady pretty much almost came to tears, and I saw that in my eyes. I mean, she was just, you know, distance away, which was crazy. That's why a lot of the having female guards that were by themselves in there was insane. But anyways, for him to cuss her out the way he did, and her almost to tears, it reminded me of my abusive family, my dad and my mom, and my mom, you know, defending herself. And it made me snap. I had enough. I just turned around and I just told him, you know what you need? He says, what? I said, you need your ass whooped. And then I said, you know what a big or small can do. So if we were gonna fight, I didn't want to catch a charge. So I stepped back to make sure that I didn't want to hit him first, because usually I would just hit the guy. That's my first instinct. I'm just gonna knock you out. I'm just gonna knock you out. You know, I'm not gonna talk. I'm just gonna hit you.
No questions.
No questions asked. I'm just gonna. That's who I am. That's not what I was, actually. That's what I was. But that's not who I am now. So I'm gonna step back. I'm gonna talk to him. But still, I stepped back, and he got to me, and I said, "You need your ass whooped." So I stepped back, and then we're gonna fight. So then I walked away, because after arguing for a while, but then yet when I walked away, something felt great about it when I said, you know what, this is it. Because I didn't know when I was going to get out. All I know was that all the anger, the frustration, the loneliness, the everything you could possibly think of was letting out the bag right now, right here and then. And I'm going to let it loose right here. So poor Alan got the wrath of me because he got everything that I was feeling. So that's why I started walking back towards him, because it felt great to let all this anger out and not let these emotions out, you know, and to scream. I did it mainly because I was able to scream it out. But then, then I step back and say, okay, I can't do this. This is why we get in trouble. This is because our pride and this. So I walk back. I'm like, I'm done. But I so bad wanted to beat him up. I so bad wanted to beat up Bucci because he was there. I was even yelling, come on, Bucci, I'll beat your ass up too. You know, I was just insane crazy, you know. So, yeah, that was probably the only thing I regret for doing. Not for protecting the lady, but for just letting him get to me, you know. I just lost it. So, but I own it. So that's what it is.
Hey, you know, we're human and we all get taken out of our character sometimes.
Yeah, I guess we do.
Now, Nate was asked to stay an additional 60 days. Were you approached in that manner or was it just him?
I think we all get approached. We all ask the same question. We all say yes or no. I said yes, but I guess I didn't. But then yet I didn't. They probably season 3 was probably the most that they would have took out of, because it wouldn't make no sense if I would have said yes. They couldn't put me back in 60 more days in and not in that same county. You know what I mean?
Right. After doing the show, do you feel that it's more productive or do you feel it's more dangerous to the participants?
Oh, it's definitely more dangerous to the participants. It's now seeing season 5, it seems like everybody wants to go in to make a name for themselves. And what they're not understanding that is two things, that it's people's lives that you're messing with. It's real inmates that you're messing with. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to mess with real inmates. And we did the same thing, not knowing, but they're going in it for TV. I don't see people's purpose no more. The show kind of went downwards where it's not a purpose anymore. What happened to why are we doing this? You know, we don't go in there to want to beat up people. We don't want to go in there and bully people. And we don't go in there to try to be pod bosses. That's not who we are. We're participants trying to find out why the system is broken. We're not there to make it worse, or we're not there to be worse than the prison, the actual inmates. You know, we're there to evaluate it and get. And I had an interesting conversation today, and one of the fans were saying that, you know, we're actors. No, we're not. We are not acting. They said, well, you got to act to be in jail. No, you don't. We are lying in jail. We're sitting there and we got to lie to these inmates' face. We got to lie to every time they ask us a question, we're lying. It's not acting. Acting is when you go on getting, like, doing a cop role and then you go home and you sleep. That's acting. That's a job. This ain't a job. This is a job, but this is actually messing with people's lives. And what they're not understanding, that somebody's going to get in trouble, because they're going to notice that 6 days, every inmate in there, big ones, little ones, were going up to each one of us, me, Matt, Nate, and accusing us of 60 days in. You guys are 60 days in. But they'll accuse everybody. They'll accuse everybody. They'll accuse their own brothers or whatever. They just accuse it. So they were just trying to get a hype out of it. But there was a couple of guys in there that I stood away from. And the reason why is because they knew it. they knew it. You see it in their eyes, and they just knew it. You just stayed away. You just stay away from them because they knew it. And I'm like, I'm not going to get hurt and try to lie to somebody that knows it. You just don't do that. And people are going to get hurt. And I guarantee somebody will. And it's sad, but, you know, I don't hope that on anybody, but we keep pushing the envelope. It's going to happen.
You know, and that's the scary thing. It seems like they're waiting for something crazy to happen before they cancel the show, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, how much further do we have to keep messing up people's lives? You know, I want to push this a little bit further. Let's think about this. I want you to answer me these questions. You've seen all seasons, right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so season one and season two, most of the inmates were what? What was it, white?
Yeah.
Season three, season four, what was the most of the inmates?
They were definitely weren't white.
So they were kind black, of more
mixed.
Right?
Yeah. So
pretty much black. So guess what season five and season six were supposed to be? Nothing but Mexicans.
What were they supposed to be?
Nothing but Mexicans.
Oh, wow.
So think about that. So why what's going on here? Are we using it as a human experience by showing that we are, let's see.
Stereotyped?
Right. Let's see how a different, a set of seven participants act with different race, different everything, act in a white jail. Let's see how seven participants act in a black jail. And let's see how seven participants act in a Mexican jail. Looking at the participants or actually looking at the inmates that act like that? Let's watch the white inmates act with their back against the wall and they're on the lowest life of them all. Let's watch the black people act when they're locked up with their backs against the wall and they're at their lowest point. And let's see how the Mexicans act with their back against the wall and at their lowest point.
Right, like, hey, let's incite a race war.
Yeah, let's see, America, let's look at how white people act in jail, how black people act in jail, and how Mexicans act in jail. Let's see how they act, and you guys go ahead and make it the best season by being fans or being whatever. You know, and that's pushing the envelope by me saying that stuff, but it's true. It's a human experience, and it's sad because I fell in it. You know, I'm doing it for my son. I'm doing it for a reason. I did it for a purpose. I did it with all my heart. I could have walked out any time, and I didn't because my son couldn't walk out. So if he has to stay in, I'm staying in. I could have tapped. I wanted to tap out my first week. I couldn't. It was sad. But when you see that, it's sad that they're making profit off that. And it's funny because people think like, oh, I want to go on that show because, you know, I want to be a celebrity. your 15 minutes of fame will go over so quick. And if you're looking for that fame.
That's the wrong idea, too, you know.
It is a wrong idea. And that's what the new seasons are becoming, and I just hope they don't put season six on. I really don't. It's just because somebody's going to get hurt, and it's done. It's done. It's sad. And it was a good insight to see, I guess. But when you being in there yourself, it's something so hard to shake off. It is so hard for all of us to shake off. I talked to a lot of these guys, the old participants, and it is so hard for all of us to shake this off because we've seen it, we lived it, and we can't shake it off, and it sucks, but we live with it, and that's what it is. You know, we put ourselves there, we signed a piece of paper, and here we go, you know. So
well, and it's got to be upsetting too, as you said, these new seasons go on, and people on there, like, it seems like they're competing with each other, trying to sabotage it, like you said, just to get their fame for 5 minutes. But it seems like the show's, you know, kind of gone off what it's about.
Right, right. And I get it. I mean, like, again, I get it. You know, I remember watching season one. It was so authentic. Season two even, you know, and then it started getting into the drama. And in season four, when the whole Angelique thing happened with Stephanie happened and Jacqueline and all of that happened, then it totally took off the other way, made it the ratings would go high, and we totally forgot why we were in there for. Now it all of a sudden became a drama, and that was it. And I'm not saying that people don't fall in love, you know, like Angela, she, you know, a lot of people hated her for that season. She fell in love. That happens everywhere, every day. I don't care if it was with a woman or a guy. She fell in love, and that's what happens. But for them to show like the parties, the whippet parties, and all that, the way they did, it was sad because here we are giving our hardest, our heart to actual inmates that don't know how to read, to inmates that don't have a home. They go in there to be home because they're homeless. The young men, you know, showing where, you know, I remember me and Matt were sitting with a young gentleman that was gay, and he was sitting in a top tier by himself eating while everybody ate downstairs. And we would go up there, but production told us don't be going up there because they couldn't hear us. And I'm like, I don't care. You know, I want to sit with this gentleman that's by himself, you know, and he's not able to speak or sit with everybody because he's gay and nobody is loving him. And that was sad. It broke my heart. So at that point, I didn't care what production wanted or whatever they said. I just wanted to be with that gentleman. So stuff like that, like, it was so hard. And that's why it's so hard for me to watch. It took me a long time to watch season five. But it was so hard for me to start watching stuff like this. I probably won't watch season six. I put a tweet out. Season six participants, future participants, don't text me, don't get me involved, I'm done with this.
I have to ask, because you said you had gotten kind of close with Matt, and to tell you the truth, he had to be my second favorite character. He was pretty funny, but as it went on, you could tell that the time there really weighed on him. And how worried were you for his sanity, and how hard was it for him to leave that day?
For Matt, so Matt is drama, and so am I. He is when I say drama, he's just real intense with his feelings. And they kept showing on the clips, they kept showing over and over the words insane and this and that. He didn't say it that many times, but they probably played it over and over. That was a real, real hard thing for Matt. Like I said, if you're a white in an all black jail cell, that's hard, and it had to have been hard for him. Not only that, you know, the gangs were pretty bad in there, and he's not used to seeing that in his lifestyle, you know. And for me, I was comfortable because I didn't care. I knew they weren't gonna do nothing. I mean, they're young punks and they're just thinking they're gonna, you know, fight and this and that. And I'm trying to explain to Matt, we're old, they're not gonna mess with us. The ones you want to watch are the old guys that are looking at us like they know us. That's the ones you want to watch, not the young guys. They don't care. But he's not understanding that, and he was just putting more stress on himself. And then with his son next door, he was putting more stress on that because, you know, he felt like his son would make it. And you know, he judged his son by his character or his looks, and I get it. I mean, if you look at Andrew, I mean, the kid doesn't look like he belongs there, you know. So I get it. And as a father, I mean, I'd be scared to death, you know. And same thing with my son, I was scared to death that he's going to prison, actually in prison with all the murderers, you know. So it's like, oh God, you know, here we are, you know, in the same boat, if you will. And I get it, but. So it was hard. It was real hard for him and I was real concerned. I kept telling the production, I'm really concerned about Matt. I kept telling Matt, I'm concerned about him. I told him, I told him to tap out. He wouldn't. He struggled for at least 3 weeks, saying, I can't do this no more. But I got to do it, and I got to. So he struggled hard, and finally it was real, real hard for him to tap out. It was so hard. I think it took a lot from him to do that. But it made him who he is now, and it's okay. You know, it's okay to tap out. It's fine. You know, we're all human, and if he can't handle it, that's fine. You know, and I get it. It was just like that. It reminded me of the guy on season 3 to Garrison. A lot of people criticize him because they thought that he was, you know, racial because he was going to a black jail. Well, he was scared. Yeah, of course. And he was scared so he didn't even go in jail, period. Why? It's okay. It's not okay to say no, finally, at the last moment. I mean, it's the same thing. He's scared. Why not? So I think he made the right move. Why not? You know, why put yourself through all that if you're going to tap out anyways? Matt, in other case, he knew he had to do it. He works around the prison system, and he's a chaplain for a prison system. And so he was trying to do his hardest to do that, you know, to help out on that case. But towards the end, he just couldn't do it no more.
And I think it was for me, it was very hard to see like him get more paranoid as time went on, like you said, because it seemed like he thought everybody was out for him, you know, and it was hard to watch that happen to him.
Yeah, most definitely. And at our age, we're just like, especially fathers, if you're a father, you're just concerned. You're just like in pieces. You're just getting torn away with it. And it's just sad. So I seen it. I seen it literally in his face. Same thing with me. We lost so much weight. He lost a lot of weight as well. And I seen it in his face even more. So it just got the best of us. Atlanta was hard. Fulton County was hard. It was a hard. We were down smack in the city jail. We weren't on the outskirts of the city jail like other seasons. We were in the down smack center of a state city jail, right down smack where the biggest one is. That was hard. Shoot. And you know, I had a lot of partners that went to season 5's jails, you know, and these other little jails. I'm not saying there aren't hard, but it wasn't downtown Phoenix, Arizona, Maricopa jail, you know, so it was tough. It was tough. And I don't know. I have a hard time with a lot of that stuff, but yeah.
Lastly, and I know we kind of touched on this a little bit, how did the 60 days experience, you know, change you as a person on the outside? And do you guys all kind of still keep in touch with each other?
Yeah, it helped me in a lot of ways. I was always the type of person that was hard to be alone. I had to always have somebody with me, a friend, my wife, a family member, my kids. I couldn't stay home. I was just that type of person. I was always on the streets. I was always doing something, making money somewhere, hustling, whatever it may be. I was out there doing something instead of being home. That changed me. That experience changed me. It taught me how that it's okay to be alone. That it was okay to say, all right, this is fine. You know, you're okay to be alone. Being in that cell broke me from that. And also to read, you know, to sit there and love yourself and say, it's okay. You don't need somebody to consistently love you. You can love yourself. So I was reading books that I never thought I'd read. I'm like, holy smack. These are like stories. It's like TV, you know, and I was reading books after books. It was amazing. It was a whole new world to me. So that taught me that. It also taught me something I already knew. I was able to see my Christmas Carol. I was able to see my future. When I sat in that jail time at the time, I realized that, wow, this could have been me if I didn't grow up or make that right decision to not go certain friends to go do a drive-by or go do a robbery or go do this and that. When I finally stopped that stuff and I said, I got to change my life for my son, I realized that this right here could have been my life. And I was able to step in the future in jail, an actual inmate, to see that. And it was amazing. It was amazing to see that. And I was like, wow, that is crazy. That is so insane. Who gets this chance? Who gets to see this? You know, so I was able to accept that and see that. And I came back more. I was so much grateful for my life now. So much grateful for the things I have now. So much grateful for life and my freedom. But it was great. So that taught me so much. As far as talking to the other participants, I talked to Zach, I talked to Nate almost on a daily basis, Matt, Ryan from season 2. I talked to Alan once in a while. I talked to Angela, I talked to Jacqueline, I talked to Stephanie. That's pretty much it that we try to keep in bases with. I kind of choose and pick who I like and dislike on the seasons or for what they did or what they stand for, I guess. I try to keep more of the positive people in my life. We kind of just move on and I literally just need to start getting away from the 60 days in and start making me from me. And I've been writing this book forever and I've been wanting to use this 60 days in as a platform for my book, but it's almost like I don't want to use it because I don't need it, but I don't know. It depends. We'll see where God leads me to. Again, I've been writing for years and years. It's just, I never released it. I never put it all together to say, hey, here's my book and there's so many of my books I want to send out just to show my stories, that there's hope out there or, you know, and other things, you know, so how to grow up, you know, out of the neighborhood, you know, I don't know, just a lot of things, but that's in projects, but I'm still trying to learn a lot of stuff.
Johnny, your journey was amazing. You know, you've come off not only here, but on the show as an incredible person. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If you could just, I know you kind of just gave a little brief what you're doing, but if there's any way people can reach you, get a hold of you, or projects you're working on, if you want to tell us.
Yeah, they can follow me on Facebook. I'm under Johnny Ramirez. On Twitter, Johnny Ramirez. On Instagram, Johnny Ramirez. I'm doing projects. I'm trying to get with this, they're trying to get their nonprofit license, but it's called Man Cave. I just did a speech with about 300 people, including the mayor of Arizona, of Phoenix, I'm sorry. And it's called Man Cave. And we are trying to get out to young men how to be men again and try to get men to be men as well. Try to take the load off single women and trying to help out the community by doing that, by getting the men back to work, getting the men to owning their kids, getting the men to be men, and getting the women to let men be men, and all understanding to that we all got to help each other, and it's okay to need help, and also that we got to give hope for our ladies. You know, our ladies are tired. Our women are so tired of carrying this world on their shoulders. So we got to bring that back together and work together as parents because it affects our kids. So, yeah, I truly, truly want to give a shout out to Man Cave for doing that. But, yeah, I definitely want to work on stuff like that. I have about 3 speeches I'm working on for a couple of jails here in Arizona. They want me to go and talk to some inmates, some young men. So that's in the works right now. But as far as right now, I'm just trying to live life, work, and you know, try to stay off social media and get myself in trouble. I'm always getting in trouble because I speak the truth. I speak what I see, and maybe I don't, and people call me out on it, and it's fine. And I'm not, you know, I'm not just one way. I'll take the criticism and walk another way. But you know, just try to be who I am, man, you know, and I appreciate it. I appreciate all the kind words and having me on. And, I really thank you and thank all my fans for listening and understanding. And they, you know, they're more than welcome to follow me and ask me any kind of questions they want, and I'll give it the honest truth. And if they want to talk about things, I have already had a couple of fans ask me, how do I raise a son, or how do I do this, or this and that. I don't mind answering back. Don't call me a celebrity. You know, if you want to follow me, let's be friends. But I'm not stuck with the celebrity thing. It's hard to get that in my head. I know that I'm a reality celebrity, people say, but it's really hard to gather that. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. But, you know, you seem to be a humble person, so I think you're handling it pretty well.
Yeah, it's hard.
But thank you again, Johnny. You know, your story is incredible, man. And I look forward to seeing more work from you. And hopefully we can work together in the future again.
Sounds good, brother. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Okay, everybody. I'm your host, James C. Turner Jr. You can find me on Twitter at JPZelda1990. Tune in next week. And thank you so much.
Nothing but positive vibes all day. Grinding, trying to make a better way. Better listen to what the songs say. Truth be told, you better slow your roll. I've been on the same road before. You know I'm the chosen one. I spit flows from the brain. Young G1.